Hello, everyone. Brian Newbert here from GoldenBlack.com, live in his car. Once again, this time following Purdue's 81-76 win over Indiana in Mackey Arena. I'm getting better at the whole hello instead of good evening or good morning or good afternoon, whatever. This is your GoldenBlack.com Drive Home postgame podcast. It is brought to you by our friends at the East End Grill and Ripple and Company, Purdue Federal Credit Union, the Sand Valley Resort, and the Whitaker Inn, which I'll be driving by here in about 10 to 12 minutes, thus indicating to me that it is time to wrap it the hell up. But it's a lot to talk about here after Purdue's 81-76 win over rival, and I say that with a question mark, Indiana. I know historically this has been Purdue's signature rivalry, but I feel like Michigan State has probably supplanted it as the game for Purdue here lately. Some of you may disagree with me, and that's fine. But if you wanted a bloodbath here tonight, based on the records, based on the trending of both teams, and so on and so forth, you were disappointed. But you probably should not have been. You should probably enjoy every win because none of them are easy. But this was a game Indiana really pushed Purdue to its limit in, and I think that's a credit to Indiana. I think they played really well. I think they had a good game plan that lined up well with everything Purdue's been doing well during its winning streak, and they damn near pulled it off. But I think the difference in the game, among many, was Purdue's continued ability to score off other people's turnovers. That's a two-part equation there. You got to force the turnover and then you got to score off it. And Purdue gets another 25 plus points off turnovers in this game, and that's the singular difference in the game. And then I think Trey Kaufman-Wren took kind of a, for lack of a term, Heisman moment tonight. I think that he really had a signature game during this outstanding season of his, in which he's becoming a star. Against an opponent that he really, really enjoys beating, I suspect. And I don't think he even led Purdue in scoring tonight, but his game winner with like 8 seconds to go, which was not an easy shot, was probably the shot of the season for Purdue. That and Miles Colvin's putback against Ole Miss probably being the two that really come to mind. I'm trying to rack my brain here for what else would even be in that conversation, but that was a really big shot Kaufman-Wren made as part of a really big game for him in a game where one of the few times this season Purdue's lack of size actually showed up, because they didn't have a lot of answers for Umar Ballo, who's a battleship of a human who decided he wanted to play tonight and did so in a way that Purdue really struggled against, to keep him off the glass, to keep him out of screen and roll situations and things like that. And Purdue just went at him with Trey Kaufman-Wren, making him guard in space to open the second half, really changed this game. And then Kaufman-Wren scoring over him with a few seconds left on the clock was the play that decided the game. But what very easily could have decided the game in the other direction was the fact that Kaufman-Wren was on the bench in the second half more than Purdue would have liked for him to have been on the bench, because he had four fouls, numbers 3 and 4 both being offensive fouls on moving screens. Matt Painter said both of them, in his opinion, were good calls, maybe saying that a little bit to tweak Kaufman-Wren to be more careful. But the one thing years and years and years of watching Big Ten basketball has told me is that when the fouls are 6-1 or whatever it was, or 5-1, 6-2, whatever it was early in the second half, I have it written down, whenever that's the case in one team's favor, the next couple calls are going against the other team. They got to even it up for some reason. It doesn't make any sense, but it's the way it is. And in that situation in particular, Kaufman-Wren's got to be more careful, because under normal circumstances, those bad screens might go uncalled. But when the referees are looking for something to call on your team, it's going to get called in that situation. When they're trying to even up the fouls, that stuff's going to get called. And that's, had Kaufman-Wren played a normal allotment of minutes there in the second half, Purdue probably, and I'm only speculating here, but the way the game was trending, the way they were causing so many problems for IU with Kaufman Wren, the way that was going, had he been on the floor as much as he normally would have been on the floor, Purdue probably separates a little bit and cruises to a double-digit victory here instead of having to make a game winner with 8 seconds to go and then stop IU twice in the final few seconds. The first one being Miles Rice dashing down the floor and getting turned away by Jakari Harris, which wasn't even close to being a foul upon further review of that play. I don't know what Mike Woodson was talking about after the game when he said he thought there was a foul. The ball was out of Miles Rice's hand before there was any contact with Jakari Harris, and even then the contact was negligible. It was nothing, quite frankly. It was just Miles Rice throwing the ball vertically at the basket and missing by a mile. I'm sure that Jakari Harris had something to do with distracting him or deterring the player, whatever, but there wasn't even anything remotely resembling a foul. So great job by Jakari Harris there. And Purdue holds on to win. And it made its free throws at the end, which, you know, is not how Purdue started the game, which was strange. But it made its free throws at the end, put the game away, and left with the smash-and-grab victory over a team that I think you got to give a lot of credit to. People don't want to hear it. If you're listening to this podcast, chances are you are a Purdue partisan, and you probably don't want to hear this, but I thought IU played really well, played really hard, had a really good game plan, and made this much more of a game than every indicator there is under the sun, under the moon, under the sun, under the whole solar system would have indicated this would have been. And I think IU deserves some credit for that. I don't think Purdue played perfect. It's got to get its three-point shooting right, which has been a bit of a puzzling development here, because Purdue is getting good looks. They're just not making them enough, and they had opportunities in the second half to make really high percentage looks from three that would have potentially blown this game open, and they couldn't make the shot at the time. And that was that's been consistent with some of their ups and downs of the three-point shooting team here lately. Get that straightened out, and you know, things look even better for Purdue here, and they look pretty good right now. So I think you got to give a lot of people credit for on Purdue for this. Fletcher Lawyer made some really clutch plays. Braden Smith had a big-time defensive impact on this game in addition to his normal offensive influence over the game. And the two freshman guards, C.J. Cox and Jakari Harris, both loomed really large in this game. On a variety of fronts, C.J. Cox rebounding, C.J. Cox getting out in transition, both of those guys defending, both of those guys pressuring the ball. Jakari Harris is on the floor at the end of the game, makes the defensive stop on Miles Rice, makes one of Purdue's two three-pointers for the game, makes a big shot right before halftime when Purdue's initial offensive action got stuffed, and made his free throws at the end. Jakari Harris has been a revelation at the foul line. And, you know, his shot, his three-point shot doesn't always look conventional, but his shooting stroke and the ball kind of off his fingertips, you can tell there is a real shooter's skill there by what he does at the foul line. He's calm as a cucumber. Hold on. Cool as a cucumber, calm as a, what's the calm? What's the one for calm? Calm as a something. Anyway, never mind. Cool as a cucumber, calm as a clam. I don't know, maybe I'm just like, I don't know if clams are calm or not, but maybe I'm just transposing letters in my head and making stuff up, which I probably am. But anyway, Jakari Harris has been money at the foul line, and that's been a really big deal for Purdue, especially late in games when opponents have to foul. So Purdue really guts this one out when some stuff really went against them. I thought the officials didn't have their best game in both directions. I thought Purdue benefited from it too at times. Indiana benefited from it a little bit in the second half, but I think that was part of it. I think Purdue turned the ball over too much. still. And I think that Purdue had a real disadvantage on the glass against the overwhelming size of Balo and whatnot, that they just kind of had to overcome. They just had to kind of overachieve and just weather it and just do the best they could with it. The attention they had to pay on Umar Balo on screen and roll was very similar to what Zach Edey did to opponents last year, where you had to dedicate bodies to keeping him, A, from dunking on those rolls to the basket, and B, from getting putbacks. And Trey Galloway did a really good job making tough shots, tough runners around the basket that he had clean looks on, because Purdue had to keep Balo off of the rim. So if you think Purdue defended Galloway poorly, I could see why you'd think that, but there was reason that Galloway had such clean looks on those shots. And those are shots that IU all year long has been shooting a very low percentage on. It was just one of those games where it's going for Galloway, it's going for McKenzie and Bacco at a level that hasn't been the case all season long. Much like Ohio State, where it was a game where they kind of shot over their heads. And credit to IU, they've really made a game out of this. They were more competitive than I thought they'd be. They were more buoyant than I thought they'd be. I thought they were pretty close to kind of packing it in and letting the wheels fall off here. But that didn't happen. But give Purdue even more credit for weathering it and coming back not once but twice to win this game that they couldn't afford to lose. You can't lose any more home games here if you want to continue to be a viable Big Ten contender. Purdue has now played 11 games. Big Ten leading Michigan State won't play its ninth until Saturday. So that's where things are in the Big Ten race. Purdue's two games back. Is going to need Michigan State to come back to earth a little bit against the more challenging part of their schedule. But Purdue has to do its part by winning its home games, winning enough road games to keeping itself within striking distance here, and then ask for some help from other people. And preferably get that game in East Lansing. That would be helpful. But that's a couple weeks away. So, look, that's what I got from Purdue's 81-76 win over Indiana here in Mackey Arena. I appreciate you guys listening. I appreciate you guys supporting some of this free multimedia content by becoming members at goldenblack.com. If nothing else, if you could leave us reviews on your favorite podcast platform, that would be much appreciated as well. Preferably the five-star variety, just like IU likes to recruit. Five stars only. That's what I got. So thank you once again to the East End Grill and Ripple & Company, Purdue Federal Credit Union, Sand Valley Resort and the Whitaker Inn, which I'm passing by here any second now. And we appreciate all of them once again. And thank you to you guys. I will talk to you guys again on Tuesday night from either Iowa City or Coralville, Iowa, depending on how close I am to my hotel when I get this wrapped up or when I start it. I don't know. Purdue plays Iowa Tuesday night, and we will talk to you again then. So thanks a lot, everybody. Bye now.